Session number 14806, Eddie Murray, Reel 6.
Mr. Eddie Murray, side 6. Could you just go over the... you were saying that you only saw that happen once, this...
In Indochina. Yes. Well, I didn't see it myself. Mm. I actually heard about it. Mm. And that was out in the wilds at a place called Sun La, which we visited later on in 1945. Mm. And that was where they used barbed wire to put across the bloke. And he stayed there overnight and halfway through the next day. Mm. And then the lieutenant concerned, Chanel, who became a general later on, he... accepted the promise from this lad, you know.
That he'd be a good boy again.
That he'd be a good boy.
Right.
But Chanel had it in his mind that, did he have 50? No, he had 30 people there to build the fort at Sun La. And he intended to send 15 back because they all had prison records. And of course, the colonel in command of the Legion knew what he was doing, sending the worst offenders, you see, to this really place, out in the jungle place. And Chanel objected to a visiting general who had nothing at all to do with the Legion, but he objected and he told him, he said, they've all got prison records and I think that, you know, it's about time I had to, it'd be much better, I'd be able to count upon 15, you know, if I got new men, rather than not be able to count on anybody at all.
Yes.
And the general agreed and got in touch with Alessandri, who was very, very cross, as a matter of fact, with Chanel, and told him that in future he must allow the Legion to do what it had done in the past, settle its own business.
Yes.
And so, but that was the only time, and it was the next day that these 15 were leaving, and he was one of them, and so you know, he was more or less obliged to let him go.
Going back to the Sidi Bel Abbes, that what sort of age were most of the people there, roughly speaking?
The age?
Yes, much the same age. I mean, sort of early 20s-ish, or
yes, 20s. Mm. But there were some veterans, of course, who had done 15 years, and who were, I suppose, 35, 40.
Really? Okay, and they're still legionnaires.
Still legionnaires,
as opposed to a sergeant or anything. Yeah. Pastimes. And what did people do pastime down the Nafi, or what did they do?
To the brothels.
Yes.
There were three in Sidi Bel Abbes: La Lune, the Moon, the Sun, and the Sphinx. And of course...
which was the most popular? And why?
I can't remember, really. I think they were all more or less equal, I'm quite sure. There would be changes occasionally where there would be a glamorous girl there, you know, and it would become popular for a while. Mm. But really, you know, I wasn't a habitué.
Yes.
I used to go down there on guard duties, but I had my sources elsewhere.
Amongst your pupils?
No, certainly not amongst the pupils. Some of their parents, yes.
Oh, really?
And
I'm shocked.
No, there were quite a lot of commercial people.
Oh, okay.
In the city of Balabas. Yes. It was a big city, you know.
Uh-huh.
Probably about 30,000.
Really? Oh, yeah. Not just an outpost, yes. Hobbies.
Hobbies.
Well, did you have to do a guard at the brothel?
Oh, yes. It's not an armed guard. Not an armed guard. It was a bayonet thing, you know. What do you call a planton? And it wasn't looked for. It was an easy post, really, because you could sit down and inside the door. And of course, if they became obstreperous, then you know you might be in trouble. But there are frequent patrols outside, around the native quarters, by a sergeant and maybe six men. And the sergeant was arms and the. And the six men would have their rifles.
were the problems with the Arabs at that time? I mean, you know, antagonism or just violence?
I'm sure there was a lot of antagonism, but they seemed to be disciplined to the presence of the Legion, and they knew that if they, you know, if they got into trouble or if they started trouble, then no reinforcements that would be there immediately, and And the legion in Sidi Bel Abbes, you see, was an asset for the whole of the town. I mean, they spent a lot of money. And,
yes.
And what's more, they used to grow their own vegetables and chickens and pigs and all that sort of thing. Not that pigs would be acceptable for the
Arabs,
most of them.
I was trying to find out, I don't know if a legionnaire fell drunk in an Arab district. I mean, would he be alone or his throat hit?
It wasn't unknown for killings to take place in the Arab quarters or beatings up. But quite often the beatings up would be, you know, when a legionnaire got drunk and he was in the presence of the normal French army, you know, the infantry or the artillery.
Ah, inter-unit rivalry.
Mm.
Okay. Yes.
But the Arabs kept themselves to themselves most of the time.
Right. Pastimes and so forth in the Legion?
Played a lot of football. Mm. Didn't play much. I didn't play any rugby, I don't think, in North Africa.
Mm.
We did in Indochina. Basketball and volleyball were very, very popular. Mm. Long distance running, marathons.
Mm.
And we used to have maybe a couple of times a year inter-army sports.
Mm-hmm.
And that, was had daggers drawn, really. But there were some wonderful people you know, taking part in that sort of thing.
Mm.
In the library, you know, we used to have the, as I said before, bridge, and they were usually in the foyer, in the Nafi, you'd get the Italians would start, you know, the, I don't know what it's called, I can't remember, shoving the fingers out, you know, for...
Sort of a snap game, yes.
And then there was the French, or anybody that's been in France for a long time, you learn to play belote, la belote, which is a card game of 32 cards. And then we used to play whist, of course. Among the more educated people, like the university people and that sort of thing, used to play whist and enjoy it, or used to teach them. There was, in those days, quality, really, in the Legionnaires, as I tried to explain before. And so there was a lot of book reading went on.
Right.
And they'd sit there quiet and you know, work it all out, because none of the Jewish people intended to stay there, because there was a special category invented for the Jewish people and those who came across when Hitler started coming to power. And after the beginning of the war, after 1939, engagé volontaire pour la durée de la guerre, volunteers for the duration of the war.
How did these Jewish people get on with the soldiering and so forth? I
mean, they were pretty poor soldiers, really pretty poor.
And basic training and all the marching.
But they had to do it, and they suffered.
Yes.
But then the Jewish people have been suffering for years, and they seem to accept it as part of their their lot.
Okay. And what about
cinema? There were two cinemas in Sidi Bel Abbes.
Yes.
There was one cinema in Saida, and we used to get, you know, not too bad. The films were not too bad. Not too ancient origin. As I said, and then Maurice Chevalier came, and I took him round, and
really?
He was on for an evening at the Empire, and because his manager at the time was actually from Burnham Field, just a few miles from where I was born.
Oh, really?
And so we got on extremely well. And then...
Well, they used to have these sort of ENSA shows came around, did they?
Well, no, they used to come out...
these were commercial ones.
Personal appearance.
Yes.
You know.
But, I mean, these were concerts or events organised by the Legion for an entertainer to come out and entertain the troops.
No, on the contrary. They would be... entirely, very definitely apart from the Legion.
Oh, right.
It was personal appearances, and their agent would be doing his own thing. But they would come and visit the Legion.
Yes. Oh.
Like Maurice Chevalier came to visit the Legion, and as soon as he appeared, do you see, I was informed and told, you know, go and take him out and look after him. As far as the museums are concerned, you see, look after him. And that's what I did with Maurice Chevalier. We spent the whole day together. He came, he came to the music and was, you know, very appreciative.
Uh-huh.
And then Rina Ketty, you know, the famous film star, and Jean-Pierre Roman, the coloured girl. Who did such a lot of Josephine Baker?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yes,
did such
yes,
a lot
yes.
of charity work. Mm. She came and I took her around, and an American, and she had a photograph. Do you see, like this, and I carried it around with me for ages, even into Indochina, and there it disappeared somehow. But it was her photograph, Gladys Height, and then of the Gladys Height School of Dancing, and on the back, printed was. One-time teacher to Jean Kelly.
Okay.
Now, I've been in touch with with a girl from the Midlands who was on Brain of Britain.
Yes.
No. The Black Chair.
Oh, Mastermind.
Mastermind. And she had chosen Jean Kelly as a subject.
Yes.
And I got in touch with her through the BBC, and she'd never heard of Gladys Height School of Dancing. But I really believed that it might have been just for 6 months or so. But, and she was all right. She had quite a bit of money, and she stayed at the Continental Hotel. We stayed at the Continental Hotel most of the time. And she used to hire a taxi, and we used to go out.
These were hotels in City Bellabes, right?
Yes.
Really?
There was the Continental. And there were one or two bed sort of lower type hotels. I didn't know them. Plenty of bars, and they sometimes offered accommodation, shall we say. And so, I had fun with the female VIPs. I mean, it wasn't every day they were going to meet up with a legionnaire, an English legionnaire, after all. And so, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was exciting.
For sure. Oh, it seems like it. I was just going to say, we're going down the list, but finish it the last one on this. Fighting, bullying, that sort of thing? I mean...
Oh, there was a lot of bullying going on, even in the music. When somebody was on guard duty, and they had appointments to keep or something like this, they might be teaching the trumpet or the violin to somebody, do you see? I didn't sound like I was giving English lessons. And they'd either bully or pay.
Okay.
I used to pay, for somebody to do my guard duties.
Right. Really?
It was accepted.
How much was it for, or was it beer or francs?
No, I used to pay money. I used to pay 10 francs.
10 francs?
Yes, that was, 3/4 of 15 days.
Sure, yeah. Yes.
Three for a fortnight. Mm.
What about when people in the barracks are fighting, and people punch ups between the blokes?
Well, on one occasion in the foyer in the Naffy, this Biscotti, he was an Italian, came at me with a knife. Well, we soon settled that, and there was no punishment at all. We arranged it between ourselves. But very often, you get fights in the barracks.
So what happened? You got the better of him quite quickly, is that what you're saying?
Took the knife off him. He was partially drunk. He was drunk, and I never was. Or he paid 2 or 3 pies afterwards, to show that he was sorry about it. But he didn't get very far on the night. And he used to sleep in the Naffy, so we didn't have far to carry him.
Okay. Right.
And the knife he never saw again. But in the barrack rooms, there was always a corporal or a first-class soldier in charge of the room, and he was in trouble if any fights occurred, and word got out about it to the sergeant major or something.
What about people picking on people and that sort of thing?
Yes, I'm sure sergeants during training, sergeants and corporals in charge of groups did pick on people, and I'm sorry to say, but the majority of the time they just happened to be Jewish.
Really?
Were really picked on.
But these were by Germans?
By Germans, and yes, very often by Germans. And there were a couple of sergeants, I remember, at Sider, who did specifically pick on Jewish.
Really? And they were of what origin?
Spanish.
Spanish?
Yes, two Spaniards. I remember two Spaniards, because I took a mickey out of one of them. He didn't speak terribly good French, really. And the accent was all wrong. And I mimicked him, and he heard me. And I had to watch my step after that. But I didn't like the Spaniards at all. Mm. I could get on with the Germans up to a point, but I really hated their guts. I didn't like them at all.
The
Germans.
You didn't know. Nope. No. Well, not you were at war.
I've never liked Germans.
Really? You learned German later?
Oh, yes, much later when, you know, going to Switzerland.
Ah, right, yes.
My wife was brought up in Switzerland.
Yes. And how about the Italians, for instance? We haven't
Oh, there were quite a lot of Italians. Mm. And they were very happy-go-lucky. Mm. Some of them were pretty good, like Van Est. I remember Van Est. And but Biscotti always had... you know, he was always working in the Nafis and things like that. He didn't have much military experience. And he was no good. And he, you know, he wasn't straight up at all. didn't stand like a soldier. And he was untidy. Yeah. The Italians were, for the most part, much more tidy than the Spaniards. Yeah. And they were reasonable, but there weren't a lot of them. Yeah. Not during the time that I was... Yeah. In North Africa, and not even later. The French, there were quite a number of French, you see, under different names, under different...
Did they congregate together, the French?
No, they would. Ah. As soon as they had a free moment, they were playing Belote, playing cards.
Yes, but they congregated.
They congregated, right, yes, they kept together. Yes, they did keep together. Although there were some of them that branched out, and I had several French friends, you know, and... they would do favours for me.
Was there much friction between the different? I mean, the Spanish and the French, or the Spanish and the Germans. Or
there wasn't time for friction, really. Oh, it was just a friction that one understood was there, but it couldn't be given rope because I mean you were on the go the whole of the time,
right.
And then you know it doesn't matter what you were doing, or if you weren't doing something, that'd certainly be a an NCO come along. Mm. I mean, I've done it myself. come along and say, well, what are you doing? You know, is that all you've got to do? You know, get cracking, even in your spare time.
Mm. What about gambling?
Oh, yes, there was quite a bit of gambling. Mm. They're the Italians and they're the Spaniards were the principal offenders.
Ah, right. Was it offending?
It wasn't an offence.
Ah, no.
No, no. Unless you got into debt and couldn't pay.
Yeah, then it became a problem.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay. What, sorry, you can say something? Or no. What the Jewish, the ones who were Jewish, I mean, did they behave more or less like one set group, or how did that work?
Not really, no. They didn't want to have the appearance, I don't think, of being Jewish.
Right, I see.
And that was an interesting question came up. We had some new friends in Bath, and she was a doctor. And we were talking about, just like we are now, you see, about the Legion. And she said, the Jews in the Legion, did they have... I mean, you've been talking about the boudin, which is pig's blood, and pork, that the Legion always managed to cultivate wherever they were.
Like pudding, boudin, yeah.
Did the Jews eat that? Mm. And I couldn't answer. But I could say, I can say that never, ever did I see any special... menu or special part of a menu derived for, you know, for the Jewish people.
What about the Germans who were the refugee Germans and the other Germans?
Oh, it wasn't known who was what. Mm. And they didn't talk about, some of them, I suppose, got, when they were in their cups, would get a little bit, you know, looking backward a bit, talk about their families and things like that. But for the most part, one didn't talk, even if one was in one's cups or had been drinking. Mm. You didn't talk about your family life or about specific events. You'd say, I remember school, you know, I remember going to school, and I remember the river where I went fishing, but not who you went fishing with or what you caught. You know, and so there wasn't really very, very much animosity in the Foreign Legion. Wherever you went, as far as nationalities were concerned, I think there was a great... And if the legionnaire was in trouble in town and he called out, you know, la Légion, something like this, immediately they'd be coming running from all sorts, of different places to assist.
Mm. Okay.
And there would be no question of one saying, "Oh, he's Jew. I'm not going to have anything to do with it."
No. Okay. I think that's that. Shall we leave it there, and then we'll resume about the Indochina story next time.
Right, I'm just welcoming back Mr. Eddie Murray, who's very kindly come along to the Imperial War Museum again today, to go on and describe more about his career in the Foreign Legion and elsewhere. And we'd got up to the point where you were... you had volunteered for the Legion to go to the part of the Legion going to the Far East. There are a couple of questions that occurred to me since we last spoke, and that was we didn't cover desertions. Were there many desertions at that time?
In 1937, there were quite a number of desertions, like or absence without leave.
Yes,
you see, and which brings me on to the fact that I spoke an excellent French.
Yes.
They called me the only Englishman that never tried to desert. And this was specifically, I'm quite sure, because those English people that had gone there and deserted, they deserted because they didn't understand the language. They didn't understand the orders that were given. And if you don't understand the orders, then of course you can't obey. And if you don't obey in any army, then you're in for trouble. And if the trouble carries on for quite a while, then of course it does depress you quite a lot, and if you think that you've found a way of deserting, as those previous Englishmen had done, then of course you go. But it was always a risky business in North Africa because the police and the Arab tribes were, whether official or unofficial, they always received 300 francs, a prime of 300 francs, when they returned a legionnaire to either a gendarmerie or to a military barracks, dead or alive.
Dead or alive.
But as far as that would only happen after three, you know, they were only sent to prison after the third time that they tried to desert. On the first occasion when they tried to desert, they would get a prison sentence of perhaps 15 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that might only last 10 days if they had... the governor's consent, the colonel's consent. On the second time, they would be given 30 days, and if they'd lost their uniforms or lost any military equipment, then of course they'd get a little bit extra on the 30 mm-hmm. days. But on the third occasion they tried to desert, then they were sent down to the penitentiary, which was down in the desert at a place called Colombe-Bachar, which was reached by rail, and I've been down there myself escorting prisoners down to that fortress in Colombe-Bachar, and it wasn't very pleasant.
Mm.
Very, very hot indeed, and it's in the Saharan region, and so, of course, quite impossible, really, to desert from there.
How far was it from the how far into the desert from the cultivated area?
Well, when you talk about cultivated areas, they change very often, you know, and even in 37 things were beginning to move and villages were springing up, and Sidi Bel Abbès itself, for instance, was expanding, as were most of the towns in Algeria. But I figure that it was about 60 miles down to Saïda. I think it was about 100 miles from Sidi Bel Abbès. So I would think half of that, 50 or 60 miles from cultivation.
Mm, okay. Right out in sand desert. Mm. Yeah.
But of course there were colonists who were down in that region.
Right.
And actually, today, it's a very, very industrialized place because they found oil in the region. And the oil wells... the drillings took place in the area of Colombe-Bachar, and so now, of course, there's a much better railway system from Colombe-Bachar up to Algiers, and the whole of the pipeline, as a matter of fact, rather strangely, shall we say, is actually guarded by the French Foreign Legion.
Oh,
by legionnaires.
Right.
And that was, you know, in 1962,
yes.
France was kicked out of Algeria.
Yes. Yeah.
And now the Legion are, of course, guarding the pipeline.
Oh, you mean the ex-legion? Some ex-legionnaires are?
No, actually, official legionnaires.
What do you mean today?
Today, yes.
Oh, really?
Because one of the things that exists in France is that any part of the world that is predominantly French-speaking, that is to say that they probably belonged to what used to be the French Empire, they have always had the right of requesting of the Minister of War in France a detachment of the Legion to come along and do police work or to do even roadworks and things like that. Colonization, if you like. And so that exists. And Algeria, of course, being in that category, they were allowed to ask for the Legion to cover the pipeline.
Really, really. You don't know which part of the Legion is that does it?
No. I could probably work it out from papers.
Okay.
I might be able to do it for the next time.
And you went to this, you escorted prisoners?
Only on one occasion.
On one occasion. And did you spend much time there?
No. It was a matter of going down and coming back. Went down one day, stayed the night and came back the next
what
day.
What was the sort of, did you see much of it?
No. Except a lot of palm trees.
Right. Okay. And what was the, when people came away from there, I mean, presumably, they were somewhat chastened, or what sort of condition were they?
Yes, they were chastened, and they used to brag about it, as a matter of fact, that they'd done a stage down there.
Really?
But I think that, all in all, it cured them of the desire to, most of them, to, you know, go absent without leave.
Yes.
But there were some of them who were incorrigible as far as that was concerned. They just wanted to get away. And there's no doubt about it that after a while, if they tried three or four times to get away, then they were classified as unfit for the Legion and would be sent away anyhow.
Right.
But they wouldn't have any, they wouldn't go away with any monies or anything like this because they'd relinquished their right.
Right.
To any.
And what would happen? Would they be shipped back just to mainland France, or to where they enlisted, or how would that work?
To their country of origin, if they so required.
Ah, okay.
Or back to their, or back to France.
Yes, okay.
If it was, but they, of course, if they went back to France, then they would have to obtain first of all permission to remain in France.
Yes.
Which the colonel could probably satisfy that demand.
Mm.
Otherwise, it was to their origin, country of origin.
Country of origin, right. What sort of punishment did they... What sort of regime do you happen to know was there at this Colomb Becker?
Well, there was lots of hard work to do. I mean, they were allowed out with guards, armed guards, and lots of road work to be done and building and tilling of the land. Potential tilling of the land,
right.
Shall we say.
So it's basically forced labour.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, there were quite a lot of stones down there that had to be broken up, or stones that were brought from further north, and they would be brought down by rail, great big boulders, shall we say, which had to be broken up to make roads, you know, the surface of the roads,
right.
Because there was no question of using tarmac. You know, the roads had to be with earth or pebbles.
Well, the tarmac melted.
And
this was all at a very strict double time regime, was it? Or
very much so, yes, indeed.
Okay.
Everything had to be done at the double, and the food was, you know, it was Legion food all the time. I don't think there were any restrictions. Of course, if one of the prisoners really misbehaved, then he'd go on iron rations, you know, bread and water and solitary confinement, you know, for a while.
Did you meet any Brits who had been there?
No, never. Not at all.
Right.
Several who had tried and deserted and got 30 days prison.
Right, okay. I was going to ask you, just changing the subject, but still in the same era, you mentioned the people who are basically Jewish refugees who were in the Legion. Were they able, I know we covered the bit that it must have been very hard training for them to go through, but did they mix very much with the people, with the ordinary soldiers, because they were as you said, I mean, there are, some of them were very highly qualified. Do you know their race apart? I mean, to put it, I can't imagine a Jewish football hooligan. I mean, it's that sort of these. Whereas yeah, I can't imagine somebody who's in the Foreign Legion who might be a football hooligan.
But if you saw a hooligan at a football match, how would you know that he was Jewish or Aryan?
Well, see, I don't know. Well, I come from northwest London. I was brought up with, you know, quite a few Jewish people. So, I mean, I don't. Yeah.
And you think that you can recognise them from a distance?
I don't know.
I feel the same way, that I would always recognise, more or less recognise, the majority of Jewish people. But in Sidi Blabes, you must remember...
Well, that's my question was, how did they mix in with this rough-and-ready sort of lifestyle, if I can put it that way?
But at Sidi Blabes, if you remember, I was in the music.
Yes.
Now,